So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Review Man.
Sergeant Slaughter, you have the gall to wave the Iraqi flag, brother. You have the gall to suggest that you may desecrate our flag, brother. Well, as far as I'm concerned, the training, the prayers, the vitamins, the belief in ourselves, me, all my Hulkamaniacs, and all my Harley Davidsons, brother. If we're playing by your rules, Sergeant Slaughter, you'd probably take 1 million gallons of oil and try to gag all my little Hulkamaniacs. Maybe you'd even try to fire some Scud missiles at all my little Hulksters, but you'd meet the largest set of patriots, brother, and I'd blow them down out of the sky. And there's one last thing that I want to pledge. I want to pledge to my country and to my flag, and I want all my Hulkamaniacs here. I want you to stand up right now, and I want you to pledge with me. I want you to pledge allegiance to our flag, Hulkamaniacs. Let's do it for God, our families, and our country. Are you ready? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome to another edition of Review Away. It's John Pollock and the man with whom this show is named for, Wei Ting.
Oh, thank you.
How are you doing?
Hey, man, turn off your phone.
That wasn't...
How unprofessional.
My thing's off.
Your iPad.
Oh, it's the iPad.
Turn off all your iDevices.
Well...
Is there an update on your laptop?
Well, Wei, it actually is with us right now.
Your new laptop or
the old one.
Oh, wow.
I have been instructed by our IT department when I alerted them of this problem that you have a warranty. However, it doesn't cover spills.
Okay.
It's like, well, what good is this warranty? How many ways are you going to destroy your computer? They will cover me dropping it, but a spill, I can't. Break that down. To me, it is like, listen, complete fault on my own. I'm not trying to skirt around this, but... Me dropping it versus me dropping water on it, how is that vastly different that one is covered and one is not?
What if you dropped it into water?
Ooh, I think that would not be covered because apparently the IT guy was telling me that when the warranty, if they put it through, they're going to examine your computer and they put it through some just rigorous inspection to find out if you're lying or not. And yeah, I think liquid damage, they're like, no.
Maybe you I don't know what you could do. Maybe
I would also imagine there's further damage to liquid versus me dropping it. You would think that there's a lot more damage from water.
Probably.
Or whatever. Tea.
Probably.
So maybe that's where it comes from.
Yeah. Well, so you haven't decided on the Apple versus PC debate?
The thing that is really swaying me is that it's been almost unanimous of people telling me to get a MacBook, which all that tells me is that I there's a lot of listeners that have MacBooks. And I don't think we have a fair representation of PC users out there.
What do you mean? Why? Why do you think that would be? Because
I'm not getting any anti-PC comments. I'm simply getting pro MacBook. Just use it. It'll change your life. I don't think it'll change my life. People said that about an iPhone. It's like it's not the greatest change in the world.
The iPhone has definitely changed my life.
Well, iPhone...
Smartphones in general have changed my
life. The iPhone is better, but life-changing. That's what I was told before I got an iPhone. It will change your life.
It was life-changing for me.
It's made me more antisocial because I can just pull it out whenever I want.
Well, I've actually debated getting rid of my data plan altogether.
You would do something like that.
I would.
That extreme.
Actually, recently I tried an experiment. I just... because I find, like, for me, things like Facebook and Twitter, they're really just like things I do to distract myself to not get bored.
There's nothing I think in life that you put more time into and get so less out of. Yeah. In comparison,
it's entertainment. It's junk food. It's just like internet junk food. And so one week, I just decided, okay, I've had enough of this. And so I just blindly changed my password. I wrote some random gibberish.
So you can log in?
Well, I wrote it in a text that I sent to Gordon, and I said, "Hey, Gordon, hold on to this for me." And then I deleted the text, so he would still have a copy of it. And then I changed my password, and then after a week. Like I went a week without it until I needed it, and really, sometimes you really do need it for communication. And whatnot.
Was Gordon hesitant to give you the password?
No, he was good. He didn't trick me or anything. Because if I would probably trick him if he asked me to do the same.
Wei Chung, you don't want to log on. That's a pretty good Gordon, I think.
That's a terrible.
What are you talking about? That's what he sounds like.
Actually, it's not bad.
Always very excited.
But yeah, it was actually kind of refreshing.
But you're back to it.
I'm
now.
Back, yeah. I'm
full throttle.
Well, it's just like I always feel like I need – sometimes like I use the Messenger a lot just to talk to friends and whatnot.
I don't use Messenger at all. It's Facebook and Twitter. You're into Instagram. Are you still pumping out a lot of photos?
I mean, I'm
filtering.
If I have something to kind of – yeah. Like anytime somebody tweets out a photo of a shirt that they've received – I'm going to Instagram that shit for sure.
Do you filter it? Do you put it through a filter?
Sometimes, yeah, just to make it look clear.
Yeah.
Why? What are you looking at?
I'm not.
What's wrong with filters?
I just think it's such a pretentious Instagram thing to do.
What are you
talking about? Yeah, nice photo. I'm going to resend it, but I'm going to resend it on my terms here, putting it through a nice filter to make it look better.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
Nothing. You're a perfectionist.
Okay, so, yeah. So if you were to edit a video and you want to put it out there and it was poorly white balanced, poorly lit, poorly everything, if you don't have the ability to simply with one click of a button adjust all those things, you wouldn't do that before you put it out?
I'm just saying you're a perfectionist like
that. I am.
Me, I would just retweet a photo.
Well, for me, Instagram is like more of a just like a scrapbook, like just to keep for myself, you know, like of all the cool little
I agree
moments.
I agree.
Yeah,
it's a great little tool to keep all of photos and stuff. Have you gotten a lot of photos for our t-shirts? I've gotten a handful.
I've gotten two so far.
Two?
Yeah.
And they're the review away one seems to be very popular.
Yeah.
So that's great. That's all you. That design.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, me and also the guy who originally designed the WrestleMania logo. But
who's that?
I don't know.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be a great who came up with the WrestleMania logo?
That would be so cool.
It
would be so cool to talk to the guy who designed all the WWE logos for like the Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Like the
you
guy.
You always hear about the music with Jim Johnson, but yeah, the artwork. I would love to know that.
Who designed the Orient Express logo? Who designed the Legion of Doom logo?
I would imagine a white male.
Yeah. But that's what I want to know because those graphics are, I mean, there's such a real great nostalgic quality about them these days. That metallic type of look that you don't see anymore.
I always talk about that old Royal Rumble theme that I just always loved that theme. Maybe because it was one of the first WWF pay-per-views I ever got to rent at a video store. So it just brings you back. I think the song, it's only as good as what memories it brings for you. Mm-hmm. I think that's a huge quality in music.
Yeah,
is that it takes you back to a time. Maybe like a pay-per-view. Maybe a pay-per-view takes you back to a specific time. Maybe someone listening to this right now remembers back in early 1991 when the U.S. was at war with Iraq and they tuned into for some escapism to the main event. They just didn't want to think about the war and all the violence going on overseas. I'm going to watch some professional wrestling to get my mind off of things.
Probably not a very effective choice.
When I sat down to watch this show, Wei, and I saw the runtime was 47 minutes, I got excited for you.
Yeah.
As someone that I know usually leaves these to the last minute and you just marathon this stuff. My God, was this an easy watch? This must be, I would say, the shortest thing we have ever reviewed. Because we've reviewed shows before like FCW, but I think we did like two episodes at once.
We've reviewed like TV shows. You know, like that South Park episode, but we would do two of them.
Yeah, so we did two of them.
Add to the same amount.
I think this has to be the shortest from start to finish. product we've ever reviewed.
I feel like this is like almost the perfect length for a review because, you know, it's something that we can watch and we can talk about enough for, I don't know, maybe a substantial amount of time. But
I almost feel a pressure that it's like people are used to a certain length of these podcasts. And I'm like, there's no way we're talking for 2 hours about this show.
I feel like we can watch something that's like 20 minutes at this point and probably fill out, I don't know, 2 hours.
Maybe
with
we could.
The content.
Well, there is no shortage of talking points. It's not like this was a random WWF Superstars. There was so much attached to this.
Yeah.
And I guess we can call this show, Way, the I'll be the meat and potatoes and you will be the fish and rice.
Yes, the rice and fish.
1991, where tact was absolutely invisible in the World Wrestling Federation.
But this was that was a quote, of course, from Roddy Piper at the beginning of this broadcast, who's a color commentator with Vince here. But I don't know if Roddy Piper's really toned down all that much.
Probably not, to be honest. I'm sure he would, if you were to ask him about this particular choice of description, he'd be confused at what the problem is.
Well, I bring it up because just this past week, I mean, you've heard me talk about my favorite podcast, DVD ASA.
Yes.
Apparently, Roddy Piper was he's a guest on a future episode or something.
Oh, wow.
Something like that. But anyway, he shows up in David Cho's little studio and he...
Oh, he's done it.
They pre-record like a month in advance.
Okay.
And so... he cuts this promo.
Oh no!
And it is. I can't even repeat it. It is like it's.
Oh, you have to
think about the blackface promo. This is probably worse than that. Okay, but the thing is,
can I play it?
I don't even know if you should do that.
Is it that offensive?
It might be.
I think you have a duty to share this with people.
The thing is, though, because I don't want to implicate the guy, because obviously the guy's doing it for some Asian dude's podcast. It's like he's doing it as a joke. And a lot of people are going to be like, oh, that's not funny. That's not funny. But the thing is, like, I know Roddy Piper, he's just like, that's just the tone of the show. He's just like, you know, he's so cool with this guy that he's able to joke around like that. And I think that's awesome. Like, I think here's a guy in our politically correct world who's still not really afraid to say what he has to
say. Does he use the C word?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Like,
why? There's nothing wrong with that. And before,
it's not, but at the same token, here's a guy that is desperately trying to get into WrestleMania. He'll probably be involved in some capacity. It's like, why do you do something like that when you know there's going to be blowback if the wrong person hears it?
Yeah, you're right. Perhaps. At the same time...
Listen, say whatever you want, but it's like, don't be so buried in the sand that there could not be repercussions when you are with an extremely family-friendly organization now.
I agree.
And trying to be on the ins with that particular company.
I agree. But at the same time, I think all that stuff is bullshit. Because I think... things are only offensive depending on the intent of your usage. And clearly, if you watch this, he's joking around. He's just being funny. And I don't think anybody should be prosecuted for something like that. It should just all be based on intent.
I almost jumped in there, and I'm worried about the wrath of Wei. Because now we're in person, and I don't want to finish one of your stories mid-sentence. Got a lot of comments there about, thank God, Wei shut you the fuck up. You were scary there.
Hey, well,
I was on Skype in person. I don't want you to punch me or something.
In person? Maybe through Skype.
Have you ever come close to hitting me?
No. No, of course not.
Even the Austin Aries Christy Hemme debate?
No. No, I wouldn't hit you.
I've seen you angry before.
Yeah, but I don't think I would hit somebody over
to
it.
Me, there's been very, very few times I've ever seen Wei upset at me. The ones I can think of... I didn't think you were full out angry about the Austin Aries Christy Hemme. You were certainly frustrated with me. There was another one where we had just, I think it was, we were in Calgary when I was just doing, I was driving and I was missing every turn conceivable. And Wei was just so upset at my lack of navigational skill.
I don't remember that at all.
You were very annoyed in this car, and I couldn't blame you because I probably would have if the roles were reversed.
No, I don't think I was that upset at you. I was probably just frustrated at how long of the day we've had shooting that documentary and everything.
And then there was one particular podcast where at the end of it, you were just like, okay, we're done. Okay, good. And then you just got up and you just left the room. And I thought maybe we've done our last podcast together.
That was in a review and impact after I think we did our MMA Expo. And I think the thing that came up was like some – it was something to do with race. It was something to do with like a Gail Kim thing.
I can't even remember.
It was something to do with race. And I think it was another argument that I think I was just more upset at myself for not being able to try to communicate what I really wanted to say. But anyway, that's...
And I also have that effect on people of just needing to storm out and need a break.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's... That's what happens.
That's
when
the charm.
Talk.
People enjoy you. I think you come. I'm sorry.
Turn your fucking thing off, man. Now I'm about to storm out here. I'm about to get pissed off.
I think people take you as more genuine. I think some people probably think I'm performing to some degree.
Well, I mean,
I feel you come. No, I don't think I'm talking to you, right? Just like,
yeah.
I think we
this
talk
is
like
how
just
John
normally.
Is all the time. You're right. Yeah.
This is how I am. But I think if you don't know me, you would probably listen to this and think that I'm doing some kind of performance here where you just sound completely like someone in a regular conversation. You don't sound like there's a microphone in front of you. You sound just like I think a lot of people would engage in normal conversation with. Maybe I sound different in that sense.
Thanks. That's interesting. I don't know if
you must get that from people. I think you come across more relatable to many people.
Right, yeah.
I never see people that, oh, I'm so sick of what – I actually never see that, ever.
Well, I never –
Now they're all going to come out of the woodwork, but never. It's usually – I mean, me, it's take it or leave it. But you, it's a pretty consistent yeah. – they like you.
I'm the shit. I'm the best.
Yeah, you are. You are. You should play that off as much as possible.
No, I mean, it's just like, to me, it's a privilege to be able to even have people care about what any of us have to say. But I don't know. There's no reason to be different or be what you don't want to be.
If you're annoyed about our discussion about race, turn this show off because this is a very polarizing presentation of World Wrestling Federation. This is actually... I didn't know what to expect. I've never watched this episode before. Knew what was going on at the time. And this one absolutely requires context of what was going on in the world at that time. Not so often that you have such a shadow over cross wrestling. But at this time, the prior summer, Sergeant Slaughter had come into the company as an Iraqi sympathizer. And this was at the time when Iraq was invading Kuwait. And... the U.S. had aligned themselves with a number of nations, something like 34. I did like actual historical research here because
wow.
I didn't want to not go into this aware of my geopolitics of 1991. And the U.S. had essentially given Iraq a deadline of, I believe, January 15th, I believe on that date, to cease their control of Kuwait and get out of Kuwait. And Iraq let this deadline go. And this was when Operation Desert Storm began. So the U.S. was at war when this particular show took place. And this real-life war was the backdrop for the angle between Slaughter and Hogan going into WrestleMania and playing off of what was a legitimate hysteria over war at the time. And Hulk Hogan was being sent to military bases across the U.S. They were even going to send him off to Saudi Arabia when the Defense Department turned down that particular visit. So there's the one argument that this is extremely exploitive for a pro wrestling angle that you're going to try and profit off of what is happening in the real world. And there's other people who would say this is a great character for a heel. You're taking what is happening in the world and you are playing that problem out on your television mm-hmm. with good and evil characters. And I think at the time, I'm sure there were people grossly offended, whereas we are now over 20 years removed from this, and maybe people look back on it less harshly, maybe.
I don't think this type of thing is, a rarity at all. Like, it's traditionally been the case. Look at Captain America, who was born out of, you know, the war, World War II, taking on Red Skull and the Nazis. It's not uncommon for that you see art try to... I don't know if even capitalize is the right word, but at least there's I don't know. I mean, I was only seven at the time. You and I were seven at the time, so I can't really say what the feel was in the public realm about how
there was a lot of negativity to this.
Yeah,
Bob Costas, the very famous sports broadcaster, he was going to be part of WrestleMania 7 and actually stopped, withdrew himself
right.
because of this.
But is there not maybe at least a portion of the audience that were craving for a character like a Hulk Hogan to take on, you know, the evil Iraqi terrorists?
Well, typically in professional wrestling, I I enjoy characters that really can push a button with people and get that real emotional response that Sergeant Slaughter absolutely could in 1991. Sending Hulk Hogan to these military bases with camera crews, that part I find a little sleazy. And that was just throughout this show. They just showed Hulk Hogan with all these families and stuff.
Sleazy in what way?
Just sleazy in the sense that you're really not trying to promote any kind of common good. It's like, this is, we're completely taking from this. There are people dying overseas here, and we're going to send our top baby face to these families who are losing loved ones in this war.
But don't they still do that? Don't they still, you know, do that by sending John Cena out to meet the troops? Doesn't the UFC do that?
I think it comes down to what you look at as promotion versus publicity. I think any time that you're going to put this stuff on television, you're absolutely going to, you know, are you really doing this for the right reasons? They say that the best kind of charity is the one that no one knows about.
So how do you feel about these UFC Fight for the Troops shows? How do you feel about these WWE?
I feel that there's
shows.
The difference between a Fight for the Troops show is that I feel that those events are coming from an actual good place. I think that they're trying to raise money for a cause where a lot of these soldiers have been wounded overseas. They're trying to get money for research for traumatic brain injuries. I think that there is an actual place of, you know, certainly people are going to feel it's, you know, it's always a kind of controversial situation, but I think that there is a good portion to that. Whereas this, it was just simply, well, how are we going to make the most money for WrestleMania? This war, it's like they're looking at this war as great. Right. Here's our angle for WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. And I think every person is going to have a different reaction to it. Yeah, some maybe had no problem with this and bring up the Captain America thing. Others just look at, wow, is Hulk Hogan going here to these military bases for anything but let's get this WrestleMania angle over in the largest sense and how people reacted to it. And this was a time when a lot of people were tuning out of the WWF. This would be their last main event show before a WrestleMania on NBC. They'd do one more Saturday night's main event, and then NBC would cancel it after a lot of success of shows that we've reviewed in the past. There was one in 1988 where they had 33 million viewers tune in for that Hulk Hogan Andre the Giant match. So certainly wrestling, the 80s boom period was well done by this point.
And do you think people tuning out after this was a result, like a reaction to this angle, or were people just getting...
I think it was one of the factors. I wouldn't put all of it on this particular angle. But it was also one that didn't have the giant box office that, you know, this angle, if you were arguing that, hey, it's going to make a ton of money. I mean, WrestleMania 7, they were going to run the Memorial Coliseum. They wanted 100,000 people. They ended up moving it into the much smaller LA Sports Arena and not even selling out that arena. So wrestling was not very popular at this particular time. And with that probably comes a lot of panic that you've got to do something more extreme and controversial to try and get people interested. And you look back, it's not like this was a giant business success for the company.
Right.
So the main event, it started off with Hulk Hogan visiting some of these military bases in the U.S. And our announcers for the night, Vince McMahon and Roddy Piper. And this was after Jesse Ventura had left. What did you think of Roddy Piper? Because we're going to get a lot of him next week for WrestleMania 7.
I think he's awesome. I think he's so great because he's somebody who clearly just says what he wants, anything he wants. Rice and fish versus meat and potatoes.
That's how he summed up the Legion of Doom taking on the Orient Express later on in the night. Yeah. Meat and potatoes versus rice and fish.
Yeah. I like him.
we also announced that Jack Tunney will be there later tonight, one of the all-time charismatic figureheads, an authority position in the WWF. And Piper also notes that they're all wearing yellow ribbons to support the troops, as he shows on his arm.
So yellow was the color?
I guess so, yes.
Troops. Cool.
And we just go right into the first match, which these were typically you'd put on a big match at the start of the show rather than build to it.
And why was that?
I think it was just that you had the lead-in and you just wanted to start it off and hopefully keep people. And that was always kind of their strategy on these particular NBC specials. Mm-hmm. It was Earthquake and Dino Bravo taking on Hulk Hogan and Tugboat.
And they show the graphics, the logos for
yes,
every single guy.
Everyone had logos.
I love that. I love the logos in that, like I said, the 80s shiny metallic style. Everybody should have a logo to this day. They kind of do it on SmackDown where on all the graphics, they kind of show, you know, like they would show John Cena's current t-shirt design and all that.
But right.
I feel like everybody needs their own main symbol. And I'm not just talking about guys like John Cena. I'm talking about everybody. Here, you had...
Jim Duggan had like the saw.
Yeah. Tugboat here had his own logo. You know, the Dino Bravo logo. I mean, think about just the merchandising opportunity, but also it just creates that visual symbol that you attach to every guy to make them look somewhat important.
And they used to always have the guys cut their those market specific promos with where the green screen had their logo on it. I always loved those.
I would love to see like an indie fed, you know, like maybe like the VCW.
VCW should totally do that. Just tap into that nostalgia. Very cheap to do. You just have a JPEG and a green screen, and you're off to the races. Mm-hmm. So Earthquake and Hogan had their big feud in 1990 and was really positioned as the main event of SummerSlam the prior year. So tag match here. Roddy Piper. Maybe this was the one match that Art Donovan went back to research ahead of King of the Ring 94 because Piper immediately asked Vince how much each of these guys weigh. And after Vince breaks down Earthquake and Dino Bravo's weights, then Piper's like, well, how about the other team? How much do those guys weigh? I immediately just had Art Donovan in mind.
That is the go-to question.
How much do these guys weigh? And Hogan locks up with Dino Bravo.
How often would Hogan have even appeared on TV?
It was rare. That's why it was a very big important thing when they would do these specials because Hogan would rarely appear on the syndication because unless it was to shoot an angle, and very rarely you would ever do a match with him.
Would he even have jobber matches?
No. Yeah. I remember as a kid, that was always something where it was like you knew Hulk Hogan was the big star, but I never got to see this guy. And that made you want to see the pay-per-view or go to the house show. Mm-hmm. And that was always the strategy that, you know, Hulk Hogan, you had to pay to see him, which not the worst strategy at all.
Well, you can certainly tell by this crowd because, man, just at least from the get-go here.
Just this crowd was amazing, just so hot for this particular show. And this had been taped. This wasn't live. It had been taped a couple days prior. Hogan locks up with Bravo with this collar and elbow tie-up, sending him into the corner, and then just starts posing, hits him with a back body drop, and punches Jimmy Hart off of the apron. Crowd just super, super hot here for the baby faces. Tugboat, who would later become Typhoon, comes in, and he misses Bravo in the corner, takes a reverse atomic drop, and then makes the hot tag to Hogan, who comes in attacking Earthquake. Scoop slams him, clotheslines him in the corner. Tugboat and Hogan hit a double big boot, and then Earthquake hits this jumping front kick to Tugboat. This was a high spot for Earthquake, just jumping in the air and throwing that foot forward, and then chokes him with the tag rope. There was a bear hug spot to Tugboat by Earthquake. Then Tugboat hits a splash. He's running the ropes, and Hart hits him with the megaphone as they go to commercial break. Come back. The heels are double-teaming Tugboat behind the referee's back, and Earthquake goes for his big finish where he runs and jumps and sits on Hogan, which Mojo Rawley now uses in NXT, but then hits a clothesline. Hogan comes in with Bravo, and Vince proclaims that Hogan is right on him like a Patriot missile. And gets a schoolboy after a big boot to pin Dino Bravo. Mm. So you didn't see the leg drop here. He was, even in 1991, it was like the leg drop comes out in extreme circumstances. Oh, not on free television. He's not throwing that out.
It was like his moonsault that he would only throw once in a while.
Maybe he was already feeling the effects of that leg drop and that back. Maybe.
This was a lot of fun. Great crowd, great characters, and I think you watch a match like this, and it's clear to see why guys like Hogan, you know, a lot of guys from this era never really wrestled much of a different style outside of what this was because they managed to get such a big reaction just from doing this, from wrestling their basic sort of formulaic matches, getting a lot of reaction by doing a little because their characters were kept so strong. And, you know, it didn't even matter how technical the match was.
It's almost like we've got the opposite today, where back at this time period, you had such these big personalities that the crowd all loved, like a Hacksaw Jim Duggan, or in this case, Tugboat, that they were so hot for. And yeah, the wrestling was nothing special. And today we look at the mid-card, and it's like, Christian, Sheamus, Ziggler. Like, these guys go out there, and they're trying to have incredible matches, and they're great in the ring, but their characters are so flat to this audience.
And I think it goes back to, you know, how well-protected these characters were. From
you saw them kill guys on television every week. So when you had a match like this, it was special because you had these names of guys just going through people every week on Superstars. And now they were going to – the stars were going to have a match. It was a big deal. They show a Coliseum video interview from Randy Savage at the Royal Rumble that had just happened about a week or so prior, where Sergeant Slaughter had named him the number one contender after Slaughter beat the Ultimate Warrior for the WWF title. But prior to that pay-per-view, they had Sherry on her knees begging Warrior for a title match, and he turned her down, and that led to Savage attacking Warrior during the match, hitting him with the scepter, and Warrior losing the title to Slaughter. Then we cut to Gene Okerlund in the back with Sergeant Slaughter and one of my favorite characters as a child, General Adnan, Sheik Adnan Al-Kaisi. And Slaughter's promos were essentially just completely playing off like the real world threats by the U.S. to Iraq, where he says,
"Listen up, you puke. It doesn't matter how I came into power. It doesn't matter what devices I use to become the World Wrestling Federation champion. The only thing that matters is that I am the World Wrestling Federation champion. Now, in the past, other champions all played by the same rules. Well, we're not playing by those rules anymore. Now, we're playing by the new rules. My rule, and you may think they're unconventional. You may think they're unnecessary. You may even think they're brutal. But I don't care what you think. They're my rules, and they're very effective. Align yourselves against me, form coalitions to stop me, and you'll feel just how effective these rules can be. And tonight, for my first title defense, I've chosen primetime television to demonstrate to the entire country, to the entire world, and especially to you, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, what happens to people who don't play by my rules. I'll show you all exactly the kind of reign I'll have and the kind of leader I'll be. Sergeant Slaughter, World Wrestling Federation champion for life. And that's an order.
It doesn't matter how I came into power. I'm not playing by the old rules. I play by my rules. They are unconventional. They are brutal. And you can form coalitions against me, and you'll see how effective my rules are, and I will demonstrate those rules against Hacksaw Jim Duggan tonight. I will be champion for life, and that is an order.
Wow.
He would not be champion for life. But, you know, I watch this, and I do get the criticisms, but I also just watched the GLOW documentary where you had very similar themes were very heavy-handed, but done in such a comedic way that it was really hard to get too bent out of shape. But I think if you were someone that was in the military or had a family member in the military, you would absolutely think this is tasteless.
Well, that, like, looking back at this from the perspective of 23 years removed, you can't help but see it as sort of an over-the-top cartoonish type of thing. Whereas maybe if you're alive at the time watching it, you were probably likely to take it a lot more seriously. Like how we take, you know, how do we treat current angles and storylines that we see in the WWE today? We probably treat it a lot more seriously than somebody would 20 years from now.
I think context is also so key to kind of having an opinion one way or the other. I think the closest we can maybe compare it to would be, like, this was as the war was happening. Like, it was going on as this show was occurring, that if you were to go back to 9/11 and the next week on Raw, someone comes out praising the Taliban and saying
that he's happy that these people are dead. And then you have The Rock, who is visiting all these families who have lost people in the Twin Towers. And
that would be terrible.
Well, that's the comparison here. Like, even when Hassan and Daivari, it's not like they pushed that button as hard as I just described. That was years removed from the attack. But this is as it's happening. Uh-huh. And they're on their television. This guy is praising Iraq for what they have done, invading a country. So absolutely, if you're not – we're so far removed. We didn't live through that. We lived through this, but we were seven, as you mentioned. So I don't think we really can –
In Canada.
In Canada, exactly. We're well removed from this. But that put that into context with the 9/11 example.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, if my dad was serving in the military, I could –
You would be disgusted by this.
Or I could see myself being totally into this and being like, oh, yeah, the Hogan's fighting for my dad.
Hulk Hogan. Your dad would be – You know, chanting USA maybe.
Yeah.
So we go to Sergeant Slaughter defending his WWF title for the first time against Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And Duggan comes out to the WWF's United States of America theme that Lex Luger would come out 2 years later. This was the Jim Johnston American ballad here. Yeah. And he has Hulk Hogan in his corner waving the flag, but Hulk Hogan has to go to the back because he is not a licensed manager.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting that they would even throw that little detail in there.
When would you ever hear now of a guy that doesn't have his proper paperwork filed?
Yeah.
Duggan is taking the first few minutes of the match. Crowd is chanting USA. Clothesline sends Slaughter to the floor, where Vince says that he almost broke his back in half and went double backwards. He went double backwards.
Double backwards.
Does that mean forward?
I don't know.
Adnan then grabs the ankle as Duggan goes for a suplex and Slaughter lands on top of him. Adnan is holding Duggan but gets out of the way, and Slaughter knocks Adnan off the apron. Slaughter then gets the advantage. He's choking Duggan, hits an elbow off the apron. McMahon is just shocked that no one recovers from an elbow off of the apron, and then proceeds to hit him with a 2x4, puts the steps onto Duggan for a cover, but Duggan kicks out. And then Duggan's head is rammed into the turnbuckle, but he no-sells it, fights back. Slaughter is sent into the turnbuckle and flies over the turnbuckle to the floor. And then Slaughter is run into the post, goes for Adnan, but Slaughter grabs a chair and hits Duggan with a chair shot to the head for a DQ at 6:52. And they proceeded to just beat down Duggan with chair shots after the match before Hogan would run down and also get attacked by the chair.
Yeah. I was surprised that they decided to keep Duggan strong here by not letting Slaughter go over him with, you know, by basically ending this match with a DQ.
Yeah, I thought this would have been a great chance to really get that extra heat and get Slaughter's finish over.
Yeah.
Like, put that camel clutch on and just...
Cobra clutch.
Yeah. And just have Duggan submit. I mean, you want this hot heel with a hot finish, and this was a great opportunity to do that. But they did have... Hogan got beat down with the chair, and Vince here, I mean, my God, he's spitting on him. He's spitting on all of us. And Vince is just having an aneurysm here as he's down. And
he was awesome.
And then Vince proclaims, as Hogan tends to Duggan, it was hilarious because Duggan, the chair shot, put him out cold. But Hogan takes the chair shot, and he pops right up.
No, what was also funny about that was like, clearly, here's a man who's just been concussed in the head in Hacksaw Jim Duggan. He can't even stand up, and Hogan's just like, come on, just stand up anyway. Just, you know, wave this flag.
Well,
just hold this flag.
Had no concussion awareness in 1991.
He wants a hospital, not a flag.
As Hogan is tending to Jim Duggan, Vince McMahon proclaims, that's what it's all about, standing side by side with your fellow man, your fellow American. Vince McMahon in 1991 was something else.
Yeah, if Vince McMahon was still the commentator today, commentating like this, I'd probably have an issue with it. But again,
I think people would absolutely hate it. You're right.
Yeah, but watching back something from 23 years ago, we're so far removed. It's really like you can't help but watch it, just like almost just for a laugh, you know, just for fun.
So that was the big physical angle on the show, and then later on they would announce the number one contender for Slaughter's title at WrestleMania. But first up, the Orient Express. The fish and rice combination with Mr. Fuji taking on the Legion of Doom, which featured a promo with Gene Okerlund with the Legion of Doom, whose knowledge of Japanese culture, I guess, consisted of cars. They make cars.
And that was the only analogy that they made here in this promo, going back and forth.
You Japanese compacts can't compete with us full-size Americans.
This was Hawk said that they have the brains, brawn, and American ingenuity in their corner. Is the Japanese compacts cannot keep up with the U.S. models. And, yeah, this was just all based around cars and this disgust that, let's face it, the Japanese make better cars than the U.S. in 1991. And this was the basis for this. How dare you Japanese come into our company with your cars? Piper says that Japanese wrestlers have the technology, but Americans have the steak.
Like steaks?
I don't know. We make meat? Americans make meat?
Okay.
I don't know.
What about Kobe beef?
That's what I thought. As soon as he said that, I was like, yeah.
Why are you comparing steaks to technology?
I have no idea, but that was Piper's go-to here. Kato runs away from Animal.
Who is this guy, Kato?
Kato. This was Paul Diamond.
Okay. Yeah, definitely not a Japanese physique.
No. And the mask, I guess, covered for the fact that not a Japanese import.
Yeah.
He was not a... He was not an import. He was actually a U.S. model.
Yeah.
So I thought the Orient Express were great in this match. They were always an underrated tag team at a time when work rate was not a high priority in the WWF. And he ran away from Animal and then got to stomp him. But then there was a leapfrog by Animal and then a power slam. Tanaka took this huge back body drop from both men, which Vince proclaimed, what a maneuver, and Piper described as a ditzy doodle.
A ditzy
look at
doodle.
That ditzy doodle. Fine, color commentator. The Express started double-teaming Hawk. They clotheslined Tanaka and Kato to the floor and then got thrown back in by Animal. I wonder if this was – I wonder if a young Kazuchika Okada was watching Kato, knowing that one day he would take this Kato character to the next level in TNA. Maybe this was Russo's blueprint for Okada to make him Okato.
No, I think – well, the basis was Bruce Lee.
I know, but maybe it was just this was the wrestling character, and how can we work it into one of the top Japanese wrestlers in the world?
He should have put Okada in a mask and like named him Fred.
Imagine him and Seiya Sonata, and they could drive out in a Hyundai Sonata and get every stereotype into one tag team.
Yeah,
it would have been great.
They could do that.
The with their chopsticks and whatever else you want.
Go on.
What else you got? I don't want to offend. Just these are the stereotypes people make.
What else? Yeah, let's hear some more. Rickshaws,
a calculator.
Yeah. I don't know.
And Roddy Piper could be their manager.
Yeah, and they can get massages.
Is that a stereotype?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe they could get a where they put the needles in.
Wait, let's stop this.
You know what I'm talking about.
Acupuncture.
Acupuncture. That's a stereotype.
Well, thank you for that.
The referee gets distracted as Mr. Fuji is on the apron and throws powder, another stereotype, into Animal's face, and then takes a super kick from Tanaka. There's a leapfrog onto the back of Animal, and then a double clothesline by Animal as he comes back. Hawk comes in, fires up, knocks Fuji off the apron, and then the Doomsday Device. Just a horrendously looking move. Like, how more guys weren't hurt from this? And they pin Kato at 5 minutes, 12 seconds. I enjoyed this match. I would love to see more Orient Express on some of these shows we go back and watch.
I actually enjoyed all the matches, all three matches on this
show. They were fun, yeah.
And I think largely, you know, due to the very hot crowd, all the finishes actually were done very well too. So this whole show, I mean, only three matches, but three matches that I was very satisfied with.
Then they tee up the announcement and comments coming up from Slaughter and Hogan with their logos on the screen. Mm-hmm. And more military-based B-roll as they go to the break. We come back, and Gene Okerlund is with the Honorable Jack Tunney in the ring. And Okerlund wants to know who the number one contender is and making cases for Hulk Hogan, who never got a rematch after WrestleMania 6. There was the controversy of how Ultimate Warrior lost his title. And Jim Duggan beat the champion by DQ tonight. This was almost like Johnny Hendricks and who will get the next welterweight title shot.
I suppose that was the point of the Jim Duggan DQ.
I guess. Throw another name
just
into the hat there.
To tease this,
and they also had Randy Savage because he had been promised a title match by Slaughter.
Yeah.
And Jack Tunney, just the charisma of a wall here, said...
Hey, I thought he was perfect.
Listen, for the authority role, absolutely.
Especially compared to what we would go on to see for authority figures that were way too over the top. This guy was believable because he had zero personality.
Yeah, he felt like this guy was literally pulled out of his office.
He looks like
a guy with no windows.
He doesn't look like a guy who can wrestle a match or cut a great promo. He looks like a guy who can balance the books really well. And that's what you want in a president.
Gene, after intense deliberation, he has decided that the challenger will be Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, that
with
was
that delivery.
As charismatic as Jack Tunney was able to deliver it.
And just like that, Hulk Hogan is going to headline WrestleMania over Jim Duggan, of all people.
Oh, my.
Unfortunate.
He lost his chance.
So they cut back to Sergeant Slaughter with Sean Mooney, and Sergeant Slaughter is displaying the craziest look on his face. Like, his chin is just at this weird angle.
On a scale of intensity from 1 to 10, this guy was at 60.
I could imagine just children being frightened of this man.
Yeah.
And he just cuts a promo of, "Let him cheer, puke face," and says he will stop at nothing to defend all that is his. And again, just all the underlying theme of this Iraq invasion, and calls the fans infidels and Hulk Hogan the immortal slime.
Ooh, ouch.
So we go back and we're going to get Hogan's reaction to this. He's in the ring. He says that him and Slaughter are going to war in Los Angeles. He mentions his USO tour. He went to all the military bases across the U.S., and he listened to the stories of families with people over in the Persian Gulf. Says those fans understand why their parents are fighting overseas, because they want to defend freedom. And he spoke to the troops. And he said one thing Slaughter doesn't understand, that his freedom is also protected by these troops because they're fighting for everyone's freedom. And Slaughter has desecrated the flag, and he and his Harley Davidsons are coming for Sergeant Slaughter. America's going to kick your ass, Slaughter. And says that Slaughter, he would be so vile as to try and take gallons of oil and gag the children. He would take Scud missiles and fire them at the Hulkamaniacs. But he is going to meet the largest set of patriots and fire them out of the sky at WrestleMania. And he pledges before his Hulkamaniacs, countrymen, and God that he will be champion at WrestleMania 7. And if this was not enough, folks, he then got everyone in the arena to stand up and preach the Pledge of Allegiance for God and our country, and then waves the American flag.
What a promo.
Holy shit. And McMahon and Piper end the show. Piper is sweating from all of this. Says there will be no protection for Slaughter come Mania, and he should get set to sweat.
Yeah, this got me going. This got me reciting.
God, were you chanting USA at this?
I was reciting the Pledge of Allegiance here. Well,
there was no subtlety
to
this
all.
Angle.
I think
this is America versus Iraq,
yeah.
Headlining Mania.
Like I said, looking back, anytime I look back in the past, especially, before a time when I was really I was still really young and really aware of what was around me, I almost grouped this show like it took place in the 1940s. Like, wow, people must have
been one of those propaganda films.
Like, people must have been that stupid back then to be able to buy into all this. But then I realized, well, shit, like things like The Watchmen came out like in the 80s, and like things like, what is it, Apocalypse Now came out in the 80s, and that's that, or 70s, and that was like the time when everybody was already well aware of anti-war and just all the negatives about war, more so to the point where you don't just kind of buy into all this crazy USA hoopla. And so it makes me pretty much wonder, like, people, I don't know. This was just way too transparent, even for this time, for 1991, probably.
Well, it was, the last segment is something to go back and watch of just, my goodness, was this just very heavy-handed. That's the best description I can give that.
Why do you think they decided to go with the Iraqi sympathizer in Sergeant Slaughter rather than, just an Iraqi character that they could have made?
Well, first of all, I don't think you really had someone that could necessarily fill that role, and Slaughter did have
that name value. He was part of G.I. Joe. It was like, here is the ultimate heel, the American turncoat that I think had even more heat attached to it than not. And, I mean, there had always been stories that Slaughter was not really that interested in coming back as a heel. I mean, he had done his you know, a large run. He had been part of all of this stuff as a babyface, as an American hero. And he came back, and this was just a gigantic run. And they've always kind of painted it that, you know, it was security reasons that they had to move out of the L.A. out of the Coliseum. And it was just, you know, business was just not hot for that particular WrestleMania. This really didn't click at that level, despite maybe the heat that they got at some of these arenas. It just ultimately didn't translate to a giant audience who I think took it as you did here, that this was too over the top and too, whether they thought it was exploitive or just really hokey. Mm-hmm. People just didn't buy into it as, you know, a really intense money-drawing angle. But it was certainly, I think, the run that is most remembered with Sergeant Slaughter ahead of anything he did in the NWA or his first time around in the WWF. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Did this get you interested in WrestleMania 7 that we're going to review next week? That we only had really the angle for the main event, and then they'd add, you know, Savage and Warrior in a career match would be second from the top.
It actually did, because this is a sort of an era of wrestling that I never really watched too much, and it's one that I think shaped the industry for many years to come, was that Hulkmania era, and I'm actually curious to watch a lot more of it. I've never seen WrestleMania 7 before.
Well, I'm glad you said a lot more, because after this 47-minute show, WrestleMania 7, much longer than I recall it being.
How long?
It's a good, I would say, 3 hours and 37 minutes.
What?
So you better start. Don't leave this one the last second.
How could it be more than 3 hours?
I don't know. I thought all the WrestleManias during that time period were like standard 3-hour pay-per-views.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, it was everything's fine. Bigger in America, way, including WrestleMania 7.
As big as a patriotic.
That was probably their longest WrestleMania in history up until that point. Longest show they've probably ever run.
Well, until this year.
Yeah.
You get 6-7 hours.
Christ. What are we going to do that day? Are we going to actually get to...
We're not going to, because the pre-show...
I don't want to get there for that.
The pre-show will just be backstage.
The first hour, there's no match. There's no match until the second hour of the pre-show.
I imagine we'll have to sign in earlier anyway, so...
Yeah. Last year was a nightmare signing in and all that wait time.
No, but it's actually really cool just to walk around the arena before the show starts.
Yeah. Are you going to wear a way shirt so people know they can identify you?
Oh, sure. One of my own shirts?
Yeah. Actually, maybe. We don't have our own shirts, so
no, we don't.
That's not really an option.
Hopefully we'll get some by the time we get down there.
Yes. And folks, if you're listening to this, do confirm your attendance if you're coming to the listener meetup the day of WrestleMania New Orleans. It's at the Holiday Inn, New Orleans West Bank. Mm-hmm. And you can get all that information. Go to the lawradio.proboards.com. All the information is stickied at the top. And, yeah, if you're coming, do confirm your attendance. We want to get an idea of numbers. We've got 30 or so already confirmed, so it's going to be good. We could move this to the L.A. Coliseum if we had to. This, I think we could have got 100,000 if we wanted to.
We're close to it.
Yeah, without even doing a big angle for it.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the feedback here. Of course, with some of these more obscure shows, a little tougher to track down. YouTube only had like 3/4 of the show, so you missed the big patriotic speech by Hogan at the end. But Alan Gaynor here writes, with all the flag waving and John Philip Sousa marching music during the show, I was almost ready to renounce my Canadian citizenship and move to the U.S. At least that way I could get the WWE Network. I didn't have a problem with the Slaughter angle at the time and still don't to this day. I also think he did a great job in the role, going from the guy who fought Cobra Commander and the Iron Sheik for his country to a man who was utterly despised. The thing that stood out after watching this for the first time in several decades were how good the Orient Express were and how over everyone was. I guess it was a combination of the audience not being so jaded and the performers getting so into their roles. I'm half convinced Fred Ottman actually thought he was a sea vessel. He probably docked himself at the local pier rather than paying for a hotel. The future Shockmaster.
Yeah. Robert says, I agree with Alan. I too thought the Sarge's Iraq sympathizer gimmick was very innovative and breathed new life into Slaughter's character. I started watching wrestling at the time as a kid and thought the Sarge was an asshole, throwing a fireball in Hogan's face and burning his shirt. Then again, wrestling is fake, isn't it? Oh, there goes the F word. I love the WWF main event and how unlike WWF Superstars and Wrestling Challenge had jobber matches that have no build. The main event had matches that were both worth watching, and the catch was it was kept short so as to not spoil pay-per-views. And did the world's greatest tag team steal the leaping move from the Orient Express? Thank you for linking to a WWE show. I thought after the advent of the network, you guys wouldn't do this anymore. No problem.
No, folks. The network cannot kill this show. Chris in Ottawa. Now we're going to see how rice and fish stack up against meat and potatoes. As soon as Piper uttered those insane words, I knew this show would be incredible. I did not recall yellow ribbons in honor of Hulk Hogan, but Piper had one tied around his arm for the entire show. To wear ribbons to push a storyline is incredibly offensive. To do it during a war is straight up crazy.
Yeah, so that's what I didn't get. Were they Hogan arm
ribbons? I thought it was supporting the troops at the time, but I could be wrong. And man, can Sergeant Slaughter ever sell? As anyone who's seen Slaughter's matches with Pat Patterson and the Ultimate Warrior can attest, he's got the best forward-facing turnbuckle bump this side of Bret Hart. I'd love to know John Away's opinion, having worked in television for years, of the famous camera up the aisle shot that the WWF used for Hulk Hogan's entrance in the early 90s. Ever since I saw it, I thought it was so cool and unique, but they've never really used it since. They also haven't given wrestlers logos in ages like they did for several wrestlers and tag teams before their matches. Are they simply dated techniques and will look silly on TV today? With all the over-the-top insane people on the show, this gets a 10 out of 10 for pure entertainment.
The logos, if they're done in the same style, yeah, they would look kind of cheesy. But
you can always take the principles of a certain idea and update it to the current form.
I feel like every wrestler should sort of have their own emblem, though, you know, maybe on their tights.
It's a great merchandise idea.
Or at the very least, their own shirt, you know, should be have somewhat of a consistent logo attached to it. As for that up the aisle shot, I don't know. I'm trying to think what even he specifically means.
They would start it where Hogan would come out and he'd be at the entrance and it would be a long zoom ring.
Like a Steadicam? Like a walk-up type of thing?
No, it would be like it'd just be like a fast kind of zoom right up to Hogan, but you go right down the aisle. It's hard to kind of describe.
With the guy running, right? Like, okay, yeah, I think it looks cool. I think it looks great. I mean, I don't know if they don't use it anymore.
I don't think. I only kind of associate it with that Hogan shot in particular.
So if they use that same shot on like a Zack Ryder, would that make Zack Ryder a bigger deal?
Maybe. They'd need a long enough aisle for it. I don't know if the current Raw ramp would really do justice for the shot.
The camera would have to zoom all the way to the back where he's sitting on a crate.
Yeah. Yeah. For getting ready for his WrestleMania moment.
I saw him on Total Divas this week.
Oh, was he on?
He was in the background.
So he wasn't spoken to or
no.
Just
it was
like, where's Waldo?
It was like Eva Marie walking through the back and there's Zack Ryder.
That is one of the better stories you had from WrestleMania last year.
Yeah.
Getting ready for his WrestleMania moment of
With catering.
Yeah. Europe.
Oh, Martin from London says, even in 1991, this was proof that if you didn't have Hulk Hogan on TV every week, when he is on TV, it's special. Even if he doesn't go to his full routine, none of the matches on the show were any good, but the crowd was still super hot just because Hogan was there. It's not a formula that can work today with the big stars on TV every week, often twice a week, and fans expecting good quality matches. Sadly for the WWF, given they were planning to fill the LA Coliseum with 100,000 fans, this program went some way to making sure that didn't happen. This was back in the days when WrestleMania needed a great card to sell tickets, and not today where simply the brand WrestleMania attracts fans from all over the world. This likely went some way to ending the NBC relationship as well. It would be another year before I started watching the WWF regularly, so I didn't have a perspective on Slaughter's role at the time. He generated heat from fans in the building, but didn't do a good job in drawing fans to the building to see Hulk Hogan beat him. However, his bumping against Duggan was pretty damn great. 4 forced promos themed around Japanese manufacturing out of 10.
Yeah, that's I think that's a fair criticism of Slaughter's run. I think it's remembered as like this really heat-seeking character, but not one. I mean, you can look at it that it's almost like it cost WWF as much money as anything. I mean, there were a lot of sponsors that were unhappy at the time. You had celebrities pulling out of any involvement with the company. And ultimately, I mean, probably hurt them more than they did. And when you look back at the idea of filling 100,000 people, I think they have a better chance today than they did in 1991, where the company was not hot. I mean, like 2 years from now, presuming that they run Cowboys Stadium in Dallas, that place can hold like 90 to 100,000 depending on the ring setup. I mean, do you think they could legitimately do 100? I don't think they can.
I don't know.
Like this WrestleMania isn't sold out yet and it holds like 65, 70.
Mm-hmm.
I think you need to have
the ultimate match to really pull people in. That's not going to be just people who want to go to WrestleMania.
It would have to be something like, you know, Taker's retirement match stacked on top of maybe like Austin versus Punk or on top of something else, you know? It would have to be incredibly big.
I think like your ceiling is like 80, I think.
Yeah.
But who's to say? I mean, if that's maybe, 2 years away.
Maybe George St. Pierre will return.
Hey, maybe.
In the WWF.
Did you know that John Jones was apparently contacted about doing, or at least was interested in doing something at WrestleMania this
really?
Year? Apparently.
I didn't know that. And I don't know how well that would even translate.
I don't know.
Some
John
type
Jones,
of celebrity
no.
thing. Like, he's not even a big personality.
I could see Ronda Rousey having some interest.
Oh, for sure.
If they could have gotten her to do something.
Yeah.
The problem is you don't really have that. I guess AJ would be the only logical opponent where you could do that style of match with.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't really have that kind of
dream
program that's going to be a big difference maker, I don't think.
Oh, she's not. Oh, they could fight over CM Punk. How about that?
It could be. Yeah.
But she, there's no way they would let her do any type of wrestling
training.
Can
Lita ref the match?
Oh. There you go.
Lots of possibilities. Mm-hmm. Maria Kanellis is the ring announcer.
Wow.
Lots of ideas.
And you got Beth Phoenix in there as well. It's the whole roster.
Guy's a social man.
I know.
Social butterfly, that CM Punk.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's going to bring an end to a show. Very very interesting. I really like doing these where we do the show before WrestleMania as opposed to just doing WrestleMania.
I do too.
So next week, it's a long one way. You've been warned. It's WrestleMania 7. We got Hulk Hogan and Sergeant Slaughter, America versus Iraq for the title. Which nation will own the world title?
Meat and potatoes versus...
Rice and fish are on the show, too, as are meat and potatoes. They will be.
I was trying to come up with the food for Iraq.
I think it's the Rockers and the Orient Express, if I'm not mistaken, on this particular show.
Well, what the Rockers eat? PBR and...
And
I don't know.
Slim Jims, I don't know. And then we got Ultimate Warrior and Randy Savage in a career match, which might be the Ultimate Warrior's. I'll go so far as to say I think the best match I ever saw the Ultimate Warrior have.
There you go. That was the whole reason we chose the show.
Because we've got Jake going in, we've got Warrior going in, and I guess that's about it, right?
The Iraq War.
There was no Carlos Colon. There was no Scott Hall. There was no Lita.
No Mr. T.
No Mr. T.
No.
But close enough.
Yeah.
That's what we'll say.
You can't hit them all.
So WrestleMania 7, that will be our review next week, folks. And later on this week, you can catch all of our regular shows. Special note, Sunday night on the Law. It's the week before WrestleMania, and we're going to be joined by two guests, both Hall of Famers, one soon to be. We've got Lita and Jim Ross on the show this coming Sunday night, 11 Eastern on TSN 1050 Toronto, the team 1410 Vancouver, and Sirius XM 167 that you can tune into, and of course get all of our shows at liveaudiowrestling.com. You can subscribe for free on iTunes, listen to it on Stitcher, the Fight Network app, TuneIn Radio, so many different ways to listen, and you can get our Law t-shirts at podcasttees.com/law. We haven't changed it yet.
Well, but it's available on the new one.
Is it available?
Yeah.
Okay, well, what's that address?
ProWrestlingTees.com/law.
Okay, well, go to that address, ProWrestlingTees.com/law, and you can see all the different shirts from the Law shirts to Review Away. We've got What's Next t-shirts, a Dan Lavransky Motorhead-inspired shirt. So lots of cool stuff to check out. And, of course, the Review Away listener meetup happening Sunday, April 6th in New Orleans. Go get all the information at lawradio.proboards.com. And a final plug is that I will be hosting the Jim Ross Ringside Q&A show Thursday night, April 3rd. Shows are at 6:30 and 9:30. So if you're in New Orleans looking for something to do on Thursday night, come say hi. I'll be there. Wei Ting will be there. And you can come check out an evening with Jim Ross. So that should be a lot of fun. We did get a request for a song, Wei. Do you want to go out with this listener request for CNC Music Factory, a big song from 1991?
Sure. Why not?
Okay, what would you rather go
with? I was just trying to think of something more themed towards the war, but I mean, that might as well be... That's a pretty war-themed song.
CNC Music Factory.
Yeah.
I think this would be a very patriotic song to go out to. All right, we'll chat with you next week discussing WrestleMania 7.
Premier tag team action, the Legion of Doom. Animal and Hawk square off against the Orient Express.
Now we're going to get a chance to see how rice and fish stack up against meat and potatoes.
is live in effect, and I don't waste time on the mic with a dope rhyme. Jump to the rhythm, jump, jump to the rhythm, jump. And I'm here to combine beats and lyrics to make you shake your pants, take a chance. Come on and dance, guys, grab a girl, don't wait, make a twirl. It's your world and I'm just a squirrel, trying to get a nut to move your butt to the dance floor. So yo, what's up? Hands in the air, come on, say yeah. Everybody over here, everybody over there. The crowd is live and I will fool this fool. Party people in the house, move.